Hello there.
Hello there.
How you doing today?
Not too bad. It's blazing hot outside for South Central Wisconsin in early June, so kind of hoping it's just a weather wackiness and not a trend.
Yeah, we are very humid at the moment. They keep saying it's going to rain, and it's not raining. It's just kind of humid and gross. So you open the windows to feel like you're a little more outside, and then you just close them again because you feel gross.
You spend all winter all cooped up, and then you're like, I'm going to open the windows, and then you close the windows, turn the air conditioning on.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid humans.
Yep, that's pretty much what's going on. And it's funny, with the kids being home, it's the last week or two of school now. And I keep saying, open your doors, get some air circulation, get the windows open, because they're in their rooms on their computers. And they're like, do we have to open the windows? It's gross.
Ooh, outside air.
Yeah. And of course, the counter to that is that you're a teenager in a room with the door closed. The smell is no better.
So exactly.
Let's
their own stench. They can't smell their own stench.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh. Well, if anyone is still left
yeah.
after that, let's see.
Yeah.
No big deals on housekeeping, except to remind everyone that we now have a YouTube channel. And
we do.
And we now have on TeePublic, we've got some swag. We've got some T-shirts and sweatshirts and pillows and masks that have Hopnology logos on them and all kinds of craziness that they're putting out there.
Why not?
Why not?
It's all about the merchandising,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I had someone already ask, why no hats? And I wish TeePublic had hats. I would like a hat, but alas, there are no hats. But anything else you could possibly... If you need a banner, a huge banner, you can get a banner with our logo on it, but you can't get a hat.
I'm guessing it's because the margin's too small on hats.
Probably. Well, I would say yes, except you can get a sticker or a magnet, although the margin on those is probably percentage-wise huge, but...
But you can inkjet print those things now.
True.
With certain, even t-shirts, you can use direct-to-garment printers.
Hmm.
But a hat, meh. I could see that being a pain in the ass. Anyway,
so
enough about that.
So we want to see your pictures wearing our Hopnology gear. And we get a little bit of that, which helps us buy beer, coffee, and microphones. That's the mantra on this. It's paying for beer, coffee, and microphones.
There you go.
So thank you.
Nice.
Thank you, all of you, for your support, as always.
So, let's talk about stuff.
Well, I was going to say your support makes us feel warm inside and like we're strong and fulfilled, kind of like when a hop gets the proper nutrients in the soil.
That was really bad.
I know. So let's talk about we should talk about nutrients now, since I threw us down that path, right?
Yeah, we should. Lot of chitter chatter on the Facebook machine and the Discord and whatnot. As always, right about this time of year and probably up through flowering, of people saying, what's wrong with my plant? They just post it up there, just a picture. And they say, what's going on with this? It's like, how do you... More information, please. And last year we did some of those, what do we call them? We call them flashcards? I don't remember what we called them.
Yeah.
Basically, we walked through a fictitious hop yards and stuff. So you've got to play... You've got to wear your detective hat when you're trying to diagnose any issues with your plants and or your car or your computer or whatever, because it's not a simple system.
Your relationship.
Sure. Although
am I sharing too much?
I'm not sure detective is going to actually in the same sentences. Relationship is a good thing to be using.
You don't want to have to bring one of those into the mix. That's a big
not
problem.
So much,
you know. Yeah, when someone so does much. Say what's wrong with this, my usual response in my line of work is it's probably user error.
And in some cases with hops and nutrients, it absolutely could be user error, because you're using the wrong thing at the wrong time at the wrong rate, or not enough, or lots of stuff. So user error is pretty significant. So let's start there. Let's talk about nutrient deficiencies. How to determine whether it's a nutrient or something else. And then we could talk a bit about what some of these nutrient deficiencies are, what they look like. It's really difficult to do this on a podcast, because usually you have all sorts of nice color pictures. But in hops, it's usually pretty dramatic and stark. in between the different types of nutrient deficiencies that we're going to see. Let's just jump into it.
Sure.
We've talked about fertilizing. We've talked about different fertilizer types and whatnot. And we've even talked about plant nutrition at sort of a high level. And we talked about our primary, our secondary, and our micronutrients. A lot of people think when you say primary nutrients and secondary nutrients, well, I'm going to focus on the primary ones because they're the most important. No, that's not how it works. They're separated into those three groups based on the quantity that the plant needs. Because if you're deficient in any one of these dozen or so nutrients, you're going to have problems, period. So the whole primary, secondary, micro is not about importance, it's about quantity. So the primary nutrients, nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus, are needed in the absolute highest quantities by far. And of those three, nitrogen is king. Typically, when people think about fertilizing, if they know anything at all about fertilizers and farming, it's like, I got to get my nitrogen down, because nitrogen is the primary limiting nutrient to plant growth. So more nitrogen, more better, right? Wrong. Absolutely wrong. Nitrogen form is important. For instance, on the Discord, someone was posting pictures of some of their hops that they had used a nitrate form of fertilizer on earlier in the season and subsequently got gobs of rain. Well, all that nitrogen is now in your water column. Yep. And not on your plants, because nitrate's not held in the soil column on the cation exchange capacity. It leaches. It's negatively charged. The form that one chooses is important, as well as how it's applied, when it's applied, all that good kind of stuff.
Sure. And of course, there's a financial aspect as well. I mean, nitrate leaches easily. It's also the most expensive option.
Oh, yeah.
It's already in the form that's best absorbed, but, oh, man, if you don't time it right and you get too much rain, you're basically just wasting your time and your money there.
Oh, yeah, big time. Several growers early on said, well, I'm just going to put nitrate down. I'm going to put it down when I need it. Okay, well, when do you need it?
All the time.
Well, you're going to tell me that, right? It's not like your plant sort of saves up for the weekend and says, okay, I'll take my nitrate now. Mm-hmm. It's being taken up all the time. So you can't really wait on it to get it down.
It's not the kind of thing where, you know, you have a cold, you take some medicine, you feel better. This is more of the multivitamin that needs to get into your system and be in there constantly for you. You can't cram for it.
There are very few nutrients that can provide you a satisfying, easy button fix. Nitrogen, in some cases, can do that, depending on how far gone you are down the deficiency hole. Let's talk about, I don't want to get into the nitrate or nitrogen forms, because that's a whole other discussion. What we can say is, suffice it to say that plants take up the nitrate form of nitrogen. Hop plants do, primarily. And by primarily, I mean 99.99999% of the time, the nitrate is the form that the plant requires nitrogen in. So, is your plant looking peaked and yellow at the base? Nitrogen is one of two types of nutrients inside the plant. We classify into mobile or non-mobile. So, mobile means the plant can take it out of leaves and put it into other leaves. So, usually what happens is mobile nutrients are taken out of the old leaves as they yellow and wither, get nasty, and there it's transported up to the new growth. So it's like recycling. Other nutrients are non-mobile. They're fixed. You can't really move them around the plant. So that's an important distinction to make. Mobile nutrients, those deficiencies, and when I say always, let's put an asterisk behind that because, you know, it depends most of the time, but always, mobile nutrients will show their deficiency symptoms in the oldest leaves. Because the plant is like, oh crap, I'm running low on this. Well, take it from those old leaves. They're not using it anymore, and stick them in the new leaves. So the new leaves won't show the symptom, but the old leaves will. That's your clue it's a mobile nutrient. Then you can say, okay, what nutrients are mobile? And sort of help to whittle down the options there.
This is sounding like a commentary on, you know, helping the youth and taking away from the old people.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, Soylent Green is people. So nitrogen deficiency will always show up as yellowing older leaves. So the leaves at the base of the plant. And these leaves don't have to be 3.5 months old. They can be 3.5 weeks old and start to show yellowing. Usually the first leaves out will be green. And then as the growing tip progresses, more leaves shoot out, they'll be green. But then those ones that are older ones below it will start to turn more of a lime green or a pale yellow color. In really deficient plants, the growing tips will be yellow as well, like a lime greenish yellow color, not the lovely, vibrant, rich green that we associate with good, healthy plants. Mm-hmm. That's why you know you're really, really in the shitter, because if your plant's trying to grow and it can't even find enough nitrate in the soil to make green tissue, then you're going to have problems. Mm-hmm. The overall leaf will be yellow. It's just sort of a yellow cast. It's not like yellow stripes or yellow green stripes or like necessarily brown around the edges or yellow around the edges. The whole leaf will generally go yellow because the plant's exporting that nitrogen out of the leaf in general. So that's another cue. The whole leaf is yellow and the new growth is green. Also, if the plant looks like it's not really growing all that much, like it's slower than all the other ones, and you have that sort of yellowish color on the base leaves, good bet that you've got a nitrogen problem. Hmm. But James, I applied my nitrogen. Okay. When did you apply it? What did you use? And how did you put it on? Because like we talked about, Greg, you mentioned that nitrate's going to leach because it's negatively charged. Yep. So if you used primarily nitrate and you irrigated a bunch or you've got a lot of rain, that nitrogen's going to leach and not be a plant available.
Yep, you're just washing it away.
Yep. So that's number one thing to think about is how you applied it. And then when did you apply it? Well, you know, I planted these 3 weeks ago or a month ago, and I put fertilizer down then. Well, that plant, if it's a new plant, didn't really have a root system or that much of a root system to really take up that nitrogen. So instead of applying once for during establishment, you may need to sort of spoon feed it for quite a while until, you know, that plant gets really robust and gets that ridiculously crazy root system per a previous episode.
Now, the yellow leaves, the yellow older leaves showing the deficiency, you had mentioned also you have changes in cone growth. Can you have a deficiency and not see any of those outward signs?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, by the time you see it, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. And it's very, depending on what, if it happens early in the season, like right now in North America in June, you still have time to correct. If you're starting to see these things happen at like burr and cone set, you're kind of screwed. That plant's really not going to be able to make a recovery to where it, you know, to its general lush, healthy state. There are some fixes that we can do, and that's probably outside of the scope with foliar applications, but the plant is in a stress scenario, and your yield's probably not going to be great at that point.
So why would I not just go over the top in the other direction then? I assume there is you can go to a nitrate, maybe not poisoning is the wrong word, but can you over-apply?
Absolutely. On all nutrients, there's a nutrient uptake curve. And on one end is deficiency, and the other end is toxicity. And some nutrients don't show a toxic level, like potassium. There's no real plant toxicity level to potassium. There's a soil quality and problem. If you put piles and piles of potassium on, you're going to salt the earth and the plant's not going to like that. But potassium in and of itself isn't going to poison the plant. Nitrogen in and of itself isn't going to poison the plant either. So there's really no nitrogen toxicity. But what you will do is push tons and tons of foliage. Hmm. Huge amounts of foliage. You'll have the most lush, beautiful looking hop bush you've ever seen. And I see this all the time. People have these great big, you know, 20-foot tall columns of gorgeous foliage, nice and dark and lush, and you can't see any sidearms.
There's no sun getting to them.
Exactly. There's so much leaf material that all the sidearms are being shaded, and you got no growth. Plus, over applying nitrogen with all that lush foliage is ringing a dinner bell for insects, saying, "Oh, come, aphids, come. Come chew on these Japanese beetles. Look at how lush and gorgeous and beautiful these things are." So over-fertilizing with nitrogen is a bad thing. You want to hit the sweet spot where you've got enough to keep that baby healthy with just enough so that it maximizes the amount of foliage that you want and not so much that you create shading and stunt all the sidearms.
So this sounds like one of those annoying situations where you want us to do math.
There is math involved. There's also little things you can get, nitrate meters, where you can test the sap in the plant to see what your nitrate levels are. And you can say, where am I at with my last application? Am I at the correct concentration? So you can monitor this before you see any symptoms. You don't have to guess. You can also be taking tissue samples and sending it into the lab. Of course, that's obviously some turnaround time involved. But I still have a nitrate meter. I would use it all the time. That's how you know. You take measurements. You don't have to guess. As we say, you don't have to sniff the dirt. There are tools and new scientific methodologies. You can put the rooster blood away. No need for that anymore.
Okay, so sniffing the dirt is going to be the first Instagram picture on this one.
Sniffing the dirt, yep. The days of sniffing the dirt are over. And that goes for all of these, well, most of these nutrients. Not all of them can be measured in the field, but certainly the micros. But certainly nitrogen, potassium, calcium, some of these other can be tested in situation. No problem.
And that's so interesting to me that the overgrowth, that you can't... You can't create nitrogen poisoning or toxicity per se, but you can really screw up things up on a different level. So before you know it, you've got insect issues, and you're fighting those by applying something else, all because you overapplied on your nitrogen side.
You overapplied on your nitrogen side, and there was a picture on Facebook a few weeks ago, somebody who had a cone in the palm of their hand, and literally it stretched from their middle finger to the base of their palm. And it was probably 2 inches in diameter. It was massive.
Wow.
Over about a third of it were these giant leaves coming out of the inside of the cone. And that's called angel wing. And that is a sign of over-nitrogen application. What you're doing is you're pushing the vegetative production in that cone. What happens then is that you get this screwed up ratio between biomass and lupulin gland that you have in there. Because just because your bracts are giant and thick and you're pushing these leaves out, that cone is making more biomass that isn't lupulin. So your alpha acid levels drop. That's no good.
Yeah, you end up with a suboptimal product at that point.
Yep.
And I'm going to guess that this person was not saying what's wrong with this. They were bragging about how amazing it was. It was probably gorgeous.
Oh, my heavens, yes. Look at this. Look at what I can do. Look how good of a farmer I am. No. Actually, that's kind of embarrassing. more is not better when it comes to nutrients. Okay, so that's nitrogen. We could talk an entire episode on nitrogen. We're already into this. Let's keep going. We may not even get to micros today. Potassium is, again, it's one of our primaries, right? Need a lot of it. We talk about MP and K. Mm-hmm. Some people call it potash.
Yeah, and why K? Really? I know the P was already taken by phosphorus, but K? There's no K in that word.
God, you're just, I can't believe you. You're exhausting.
You know the answer. I know you know the answer to this question.
It's a little thing called the periodic table of elements.
No, I know how the periodic table works, but K?
Mm-hmm. Greek and Latin.
Yeah, anyway. I thought there was a Latin situation going on.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so, and even some Arabic. So what does a potassium deficiency look like? We know we're adding nitrogen, potassium. Potassium doesn't leach, well, as much as nitrogen. Certainly not as much as nitrogen, like a nitrate is. Potassium is positively charged, so it'll be held in the cation exchange capacity. If you're not putting down enough, or let's say you put down all your potassium in as potash form, as a crystal, or as another granular product, and you don't water it enough, or you have a drought. And you're just like, oh, well, I applied my potassium. It's like, I understand that, but it's got to dissolve and get into the soil, Batman. It's not just going to magically transport itself into the plant as a gas, right? You got to dissolve it. So if it's sitting on top of your soil because it hasn't been watered in, of course you're going to get a deficiency scenario. There's a nitrate form of potassium nitrate, also called saltpeter, and potassium thiosulfate. are the most common forms, in addition to the, quote, potash form, like potassium chloride. But the deficiency symptoms you're going to see in really, really bad, the margins of the leaf, so the leaf edges, mm-hmm. are going to be kind of crusty,
okay.
and starting to turn brown. And then you're going to get some yellowing start to develop from the edge down into the leaf between the major leaf veins. So if you can imagine that in your mind's eye. And that's just going to keep getting worse, and that the brown crusty edges are going to just keep creeping inwards and sort of start to kill off all that tissue between the main leaf veins with sort of this halo of yellow around it. It's kind of gnarly.
Now, visually, I know that's very similar to what you would see with a magnesium deficiency as well.
It can be. There's a distinction there. So magnesium and zinc form what we call tiger striping, which where literally it will look like yellow stripe down in between the minor leaf veins, not just the major leaf veins, so the minor ones, and a bright, bright green.
Okay.
And that is very characteristic of both magnesium and zinc deficiencies, where potassium doesn't really form the tiger striping. It just forms, it's like this brown, crusty dead spot, and then like a halo of yellow, and then green tissue.
Gotcha.
It looks like a leaf that's on its last leg and doesn't look like some sort of, you know, cool urban art installation. Like magnesium and zinc can do, even manganese.
So you're saying if this doesn't work out for us, we could probably try and do an art show just showing some of the patterns of nutrient deficiencies?
Yep, absolutely, yep.
Someone's totally going to steal that idea from us.
Probably. We are the pioneers, that's for sure. Anyway, but potassium deficiency will show usually over the entire plant because it's so highly fluid, literally in the plant sap, all over the plant. So it doesn't show up. It's so highly mobile that it's going to show up everywhere at once because the whole plant's going to be exposed to it. And there's really not enough, there's no stores from which the plant can pull to provide the rest of the new growth with it. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see this happen over the whole plant. The worst of it is probably going to be contained to the lower 50%.
Okay.
That's what your potassium looks like. Some people say, well, aren't red stems associated with a potassium deficiency, or like purple blotches on like the leaf petiole, which is the stem of the leaf before it connects to the main stem? Yeah, that can happen too. That seems to be more variety dependent, because we don't see that in every variety under potassium deficiencies. So I usually go for the leaf cues first. Usually when those red stems and purple blotches show up, you're way far gone.
You know, the common theme here with nitrogen and potassium, what you just said was, by the time you see these things that are very, very apparent, it may be too late. Mm-hmm. So you've got to look for early signs for all of these.
So, I mean, obviously that comes down to having a good nutrient management program. One of my absolute favorite things I tell all my teams, and I say it on here all the time, I've tried nothing and I'm all out of ideas. You got to have a plan, work your plan, and have a rationale behind your plan, that whether it's a business plan, a fungicide plan, labor plan, and nutrient management plan. If you're applying the fertilizer at the correct time, these things shouldn't just show up. They shouldn't just be like, oh my God, how did this happen? It usually comes from a plan that was either executed incorrectly or was comprised of components that were not optimized for like your soil conditions. Mm-hmm. You know, using a form of fertilizer that is more soluble at a different soil pH than what you have, for instance. There's some interferences that can go on in the soil complex for nutrient uptake. So people so take this for granted. And it is one of the very, you know, several things that you can't take for granted.
And, you know, you're talking about a plan here, and we've said so many times that you can't take the advice of even your neighbor on what's going on their field for what's going to work on your field. You can't mm-hmm. take a prescription plan, a nutrient management plan, or a pest management plan, or an irrigation plan, or anything else for that matter, from someone else. It's so important that it's specific to what's going on in your field.
Yeah, and even on our fields, I mean, we had 6 different soil types, over 60 acres. James, do you mean you had different management based on the soil type? Hell yes, I did. I had to. What was I going to do? Just give everybody one prescription and expect the same results? Absolutely not. I had to know over there in that block, the soil is really rocky and poor quality, so I have to use a different fertilizer blend over there. Or I had to push something different in the irrigation system as a different form, just because the soil conditions were so different. So, correct, you can't use that plan that your neighbor has and just say, well, he puts on 180 pounds per acre of nitrogen, so that's what I have to do. Okay, that's probably right for nitrogen, but what about magnesium? What about zinc? What about manganese? That kind of stuff. Well, what do you mean? Well, that wasn't in my fertilizer, so do I have to apply that too? I hear that all the time. My co-op doesn't sell manganese. No kidding, dumbass. It usually comes as part of another micronutrient or foliar, or all sorts of other things. So you got to know your stuff about this, certainly if you're growing hops in a non-traditional region where, or non-specialty crop region where all they have is corn and beans and alfalfa, and the co-op doesn't know what the heck you're talking about. Whole other topic.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. So we got one left out of the NPK
to go through. Yep. So phosphorus. Hops don't require a lot of phosphorus, like 0 to 40 pounds per acre. There's usually enough phosphorus in the soil for hops to take that up. The only case where that might not be is like in heavy sand. But you can get a phosphate or phosphorus counter ion to nitrogen if you're using mono or diammonium phosphate as your nitrogen source. In extreme scenarios, and the only time I've ever seen phosphorus deficient hops is in purposely made that way in hydroponics. They show up, they're kind of really spindly, their leaves are really small and kind of pointy, and they can take on almost this purplish tinge, like a really dark purplish tinge. I've never seen phosphorus deficiency in production hops anywhere.
So you said purposely made that way? Why would that be?
Well, that's how we study what happens in how different nutrient deficiencies and toxicities occur in plants is by running them in hydroponic systems where we've purposely made the solution have no phosphorus in it. Mm-hmm. So the plant can't get phosphorus from anywhere else. So what does that plant look like growing in a conditions where there's no phosphorus? That's why we do that.
Hmm. Makes sense. Mm-hmm. And phosphorus is, correct me if I'm wrong, one of the few nutrients where there's not only a toxicity impact if it's overdone, but there's a pollution impact as well.
Huge pollution impact, groundwater pollution. Certainly for those of you who live around fresh bodies of water, like we do, I do, in the Great Lakes region, algae blooms, and specifically toxic algae blooms, occur because too much phosphorus runoff from surrounding land. Nitrogen is the main limiting nutrient to terrestrial plants. You heard me say that earlier, but for aquatic plants and aquatic life, it's phosphorus. So basically, too much phosphorus and you're fertilizing the lakes and the streams and the rivers, and you get these massive algae blooms that suck up oxygen out of the water and kill off the aquatic life.
So don't be that guy.
Don't be that guy. Yep. Or girl. Yep.
So okay. do you run more into an issue of having to limit phosphorus then than to add it?
Yes. Certainly if you're applying manure. A lot of people say, well, it's natural, so just pile it on there. No, that's not good either for a lot of reasons. But you could be actually adding way too much phosphorus to the soil and have a problem with leaching and runoff. People say, well, what do you mean? I got to get my manure tested before I put it on there? If you are using it as your nutrient source, yes. Why does that sound so weird to people? It's like, well, you mean all these dairy farmers, you know, spreading their manure on their field or are monitoring it for nutrient? Well, if they're going to take it as a nitrogen credit, yes. They know how much nitrogen is in their cow manure. They know how much phosphorus is in there, and they're limited usually by their Department of Natural Resources. So, yes. Do I need to say yes again? Yes.
No, I think I got it. So, those are the big three.
Calcium, magnesium, and sulfur make up the secondary nutrients. They're needed in smaller quantities, but they're no less important, right? And these are hard to talk about because, well, sulfur's not. Let's talk about sulfur. Sulfur shows up as basically an overall yellowing of your plant, like a bright ash yellow. It's not mobile in the plant at all. So it's one of those fixed nutrients. So if the top of your plant, the new growth, is bright ash yellow, you likely have a sulfur deficiency. And it's not uncommon for most soils to be somewhat on the low side of sulfur. The good news is even just one application of elemental sulfur as like a powder will last you your crop life. The downside of that is that it also acidifies the soil through a sulfur, aluminum, hydrogen, ion, magic, hocus pocus. If you need to lower your pH of your soil, sulfur's not a bad way to go. But the plant itself, all the new growth will look bright yellow or neon lime green, and the bottom of the plant might be, you know, normal looking. You'd be like, what in the hell is that? That is sulfur. And as the plant continues to grow, the new growth becomes lighter and lighter, almost to a point of becoming white. Like it's totally bleached. That's a sulfur problem. Any questions?
No, that's... I mean, when you say that it's not mobile within the plant, so yep. Does that mean if you're seeing the top of the plant have that yellowish, the bright yellow, but you're not seeing it elsewhere, is it affecting your whole plant?
Absolutely. Okay. So that plant is under stress. And since it's not mobile, the growing tip and the new parts that are trying to develop will not be able to function. Sulfur is a key component in plant metabolism, in all metabolism. It's central to making your proteins and enzymes fold and shape themselves in a very specific way that they need to in order to do what they need to. So if you're sulfur deficient, you're not going to have enough of those ions around to get your proteins to fold correctly. That's a bad day.
So cutting off the yellow parts is not going to fix this problem.
It's not going to fix the problem, okay. No, not at all. You'll also notice, too, that you're like, oh, that plant's looking a little bad. I put nitrogen on and it's not getting any greener. Well, that's another cue that it's not nitrogen. It's sulfur. Very, like I said, not very common. But again, that could be sulfur can come as a counter ion to like potassium and as well as like to calcium, gypsum, right? Calcium sulfate. When that stuff breaks down in the soil, calcium becomes available and the sulfate becomes available. Magnesium sulfate is also available, Epsom salts, where if you have a magnesium problem, you could literally apply Epsom salts and get your magnesium and sulfur in one bang there. But let's talk about this complicated relationship. We're not going to get to micros today, unfortunately. We'll have to do that another time. Magnesium and calcium have a love-hate relationship. They're very close on the periodic table. They both have two positive charges where everything else really only has one positive charge. So they like to stick to the cation exchange capacity extra strong. Think about it like that. They're kind of big. They're big atoms. They're large. Magnesium is important because, well, it's the center of the chlorophyll molecule, which is kind of important in plants. Magnesium is to chlorophyll that iron is to hemoglobin. So iron is what makes your blood red. Magnesium is what makes chlorophyll green. So if you don't have enough magnesium, you can't make enough chlorophyll and you can't make enough photosynthesis and you die. Not good, right?
No, not good at all.
Yeah. But magnesium is kind of fickle because if your soil's really acidic or if your soil's extremely sandy, you're likely going to have a cation exchange problem, and magnesium, unfortunately, is going to get the bum's rush because calcium is a bully. Calcium will preferentially knock magnesium off the cation exchange complex. That's no bueno for your hops. So you could have a cation exchange capacity that's very high, but there's a little data point in your soil test called the base saturation percentage. And basically what that is saying, okay, in that cation exchange capacity, what percentage of these various nutrients make up the population? In soils that are calcareous, so very high levels of calcium, you will notice a corresponding very low level of magnesium because calcium is a bully. When you've got a lot of calcium that's saturated on your complex or your cation exchange capacity, there's no place for your magnesium to go, so it leaches. So you're like, okay, well, I'll just apply more magnesium as fertilizer. I'll put some Epsom salts down. Where is it going to stick? because it's not going to knock your calcium off, because calcium, again, is a bully. So your magnesium is potential to leach. So changing that ratio, calcium to magnesium ratio, takes a long, long time. And if you're growing in a soil that has a very high amount of calcium saturated on your complex, and you can't get nutrient uptake into the plant for magnesium, you're going to have to apply magnesium foliarly, which is not at all uncommon. Magnesium deficiency in hops is very dramatic. We talked about it earlier. It's that tiger striping. You get these, well, they're stripes. You see them very finely divided. The area, we call it interveinal chlorosis. So all the spaces between the veins of the leaf turn yellow. The veins don't turn yellow, but all the little spaces. So as you can imagine, when you get out into those finer and finer leaf veins, the yellow creeps in there. And so looking at it, you can get sort of this feathery, stripedy looking sort of effect. Whereas the potassium just forms a big brown dead spot and a yellow halo. So you get this, we call it tiger striping, and it's very, very stark interveinal chlorosis.
Interesting that the method here, you know, we haven't talked too much about the application methods, but the fact that the calcium and magnesium fight so often, and as you said, the calcium is the bully, the magnesium has to go in the back door, so to speak, and go in from a foliar perspective instead of from a soil perspective.
It's part of what horticulture is. It's managing the plant given the environment that it's existing in, which you may have to do differently. So your neighbor down the road has a different soil type, may not have a base saturation issue with calcium. So he's like, well, what's your problem? I don't put any of that on. Oh, well, I don't either. Is everything okay? No, you have a problem with your soil. So therefore you have to change your methodology.
And as you said, even within a field, you could have different situations going on, depending on how large a field you're talking about.
Magnesium has some mobility in the plant, so you'll likely see the tiger striping occurring on the lower leaves before you get into really any really nasty stuff up above. And all these deficiencies are not uncommon to see in plants just when you burn them down, because those old leaves get tattered. They're there for nutrient mobilization anyway. That's okay. Right. So come round about mid to mid late season and you're stripping the lower leaves, it's all right. That doesn't mean your plant is necessarily deficient. Those leaves are also on their way out. So the plant's like, oh, might as well get the goody out of them while they're still here. These are things we're talking about while the plant is actively growing in its vegetative state. And lastly, real quick here, I know we're running long, but I wanted to finish up the secondaries, and that's calcium, the bully. Although extremely important, holy crap, in what it does in the plant. Calcium is mobile only in the xylem. Okay. So there's two types of water, fluid vessels in a plant, xylem and phloem. Xylem are dead cells. They're basically hollow straws. And that's how the water gets up into the plant and nutrients get up into the plant. So it's mobile there. It's not mobile anywhere else. So it's not going to export itself actively out of other leaves and go to new leaves. So you're really only going to see this you'll see it first in the new leaves and younger plants, but it can occur all over the plant. But look to the youngest leaves first. So what's going to happen is, much like in potassium, the very edges of the leaves are going to get really dry and brown. We call it necrotic. And they will appear, the leaf itself can kind of curl under a little bit. Don't confuse this with downy mildew. People freak out and like, oh my God, I have downy. No, you have a calcium deficiency. One of the key differences there is that the leaf will also get sort of leathery and thickened, where downy doesn't do that. Calcium deficiency won't create little dead or brown patches throughout the leaf. It's really only going to be concerned to the edges. And then the overall, certainly the new leaves will be much smaller. That's what a calcium deficiency looks like.
Okay, interesting that can be confused with downy mildew. I mean, two completely different fixes there.
Mm-hmm. But everybody sees downward cupping leaves and lose their damn mind. not necessarily. We managed to blow 45 minutes talking about half of the plant nutrients and all right. of them very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to maybe at another time talk about the micronutrients.
Yep.
And what those are. I mean, we didn't even touch zinc and molybdenum and manganese and iron and copper and nickel and chromium and all these other ones.
So why don't they sell just a bag of, here's your hops everything that you have to just put on your crop?
You answered it earlier.
Because every field is different.
Every field is different. If you were growing hydroponically, yes, I could do that because I know exactly what your plants need. You add in the soil complex and the microbacterial mycorrhizal that are also taking up nutrients and releasing nutrients, and you add the carbon cycle in there, and you add all sorts. I mean, it gets really complicated really quickly.
Oh, sure. And correct me if I'm wrong, but NPK, you can get various different proportions of that together.
Oh, of course. And you'll get the first, NPK, the first three numbers, and then sometimes you'll have a fourth number. And that fourth number is usually magnesium, calcium, or sulfur, depending on what the formulation is. Larger growers and pro growers will have custom blends made. They'll know they'll need this much NPK, but then they also need to have some sulfur in there. They know they need some molybdenum. They know they need some zinc. And so all that will be custom blended for them. But we as smaller growers, and certainly non-traditional folks who don't have those relationships, have to piece it together from other nutrient sources.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to reiterate what you've been saying, which is that the mid-range, the calcium, magnesium, and sulfur, and of course the micronutrients that we didn't get to, it's certainly not that they're less important, they're just lower concentrations. And it makes me think back to the aroma episode we did and the fact that some of these aromas and flavors that are in parts per billion, the slightest change has an enormous impact. So it's so important to not take those for granted.
Right. And think about it like this. We talk about putting 180, 200 pounds per acre of actual nitrogen on a field. But if you put 2 pounds of boron on, you're likely going to kill your entire plantation.
Wow.
Right? So it's the micros are actually maybe the most important because small deviations in their availability can absolutely make or break you. So that's a whole other episode.
Yep. We'll have to follow up with that one so that because I know everyone is now waiting with bated breath to understand the micronutrient side of things. We're leaving you on a cliffhanger, gang.
Yeah. Interveinal chlorosis.